Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Men Matter. This evening, your show is hosted by Dr. Kevin McGuire and Dr. James Wardner. Gentlemen?
Good evening, Ruthie.
Ruthie, hello. Jim, same to you.
This evening, both of these gentlemen are going to talk about problems that happen to dad when they lose the ability to see their children on a regular basis and the complications involved with trying to fight with family courts to reestablish normalcy. And we welcome Forest Lake residents in Plattsburgh, New York.
Dr. McGuire, it's nice to be talking with you again. I'm pleased that we had such an amazing turnout. I come to understand from all over the world last week. I hope some of those listeners will be here again. So I want to go back and recover some of the ground very, very quickly as compared to last time. Well, Doc, would you please just review for people who maybe weren't here last time and even for people who were in your experience with trying to gain access and to be a parent to your child and your children, your three children.
So this goes back, it'll be 10 years this March. Briefly, we were married in 1996, had three wonderful children, and in the year 2000, I was accepted to a radiology residency in Michigan. Went down, got a house, and we were all moved in October of 2000, surrounded by many of my then-wife's family. She was born not too far from where we were living. Cousins, aunts, uncles, it was great. A good setup to be in. When you're in a residency, it's a lot of work and time, and it was a comfortable position for all of us, especially with three young children. And we went to various neighbors and relatives for dinners, and particularly to my wife's relatives for things like Thanksgiving and special occasions.
But then stuff started to happen, right?
Exactly. So things are great. Life is good. And March 10, 2001, everything took a turn. We'd had a party at the house for some friends. And afterwards, my oldest daughter said that, quote, the boy had touched her. This was an 8-year-old boy who was at the party, the son of some of the folks that were there. And over the ensuing week, it changed. And my daughter became specific about an adult cousin giving times and places and significant details. We asked for advice on this and were told to file a police report, which we did. And subsequent to that, my daughter was taken to an interview, a forensic interview where they asked questions. Unfortunately, it seems that this particular place did not either do audio or video recording and only had notes. So there are no surviving videos to look at. And in that interview, she named this adult male cousin. After the interview, we were referred to a social worker therapist to gauge any effects. I think it may have been standard procedure at that point, but we went. Then the adult male cousin of my wife's by a tattoo, which, as it turns out, was verified by a former arrest record of this guy. So off it goes into the social services arena, and the changes that happened in the system's attitude towards this took an extreme turn when, for reasons I may never know, my then-wife fabricated the story that the therapist dealing with our daughter had instructed her, my then-wife, to question our daughter at home, in which case that's unusual to anyone who's heard that, but she said that my daughter said Kevin had touched her, immediately changed her story or changed her mind, and the police came to the house. She fabricated the story to the police, and before I knew it, within 24 hours, the system had geared up to come after me. Now, up to this point, there's been all the interviews, et cetera, pointing to a certain person. Why it turned towards me, I don't know. But it did. Shortly after that, social services came, and I was instructed by my wife, who said that she was informed of this, that I had to leave the house. From that point on, it deteriorated very quickly. I found out in retrospect that she was removing funds secretly and buying airline tickets. First week of May, she vanished with our kids. Went back to Alaska, where we had come from, and I'm left in Michigan at the residency trying to hold things together, thinking that this is a reaction from her. She's scared or nervous or worried about the kids being taken away, which social services said they might do. And then from that point, it deteriorated very rapidly. Essentially, it became a straightforward campaign by my then-wife to make false allegations of child sexual abuse against me, to defray any attention from this cousin of hers. And I was left essentially hopeless to fight this in that you have to sit back and wait to them till they finish their investigation.
Dr. McGuire, when did the restraining order kick in?
I wanted to save my marriage. I love my wife. I love my family. I wanted to hold this together at all costs and thought the system has gotten in between us and made a mess of things. But when they all came to the conclusion there's nothing here, we're dropping the case, there's nothing, they do their investigation, whatever that may be. As soon as that happened, while in Alaska, she filed a restraining order against me, and now suddenly saying he threatened to kill me, to turn her into fish food, a host of rambling allegations. Nonetheless, the restraining order, given the normal human reaction to hearing those words, child sexual abuse, a six-month order was granted, and I was kept completely away, no contact at all from my children on the basis of that restraining order only for 6 months. As it expired, I got the case brought back to Michigan, and before we had finished that, she filed for another restraining order.
Doc, I need to put a timeout in here real quick. You had a restraining order against you. Your ex, well, not ex yet, I guess, but the mother of your children was in Alaska. You were still in Michigan in the residency program. Is that correct?
Right. So it's from one state to another.
So you have a restraining order against you, but you're absolutely nowhere even close to Alaska.
By about 3,000 miles.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
And as the jurisdiction changed, she attempted another restraining order, which was different from the first, different dates, different thing, and that was denied because of the jurisdiction change. Now, along the way, what I didn't know was that after the restraining order was in place, she then filed a complaint against my medical license with the same allegations, adding comments about prescription fraud and drug use. But the medical board, given the conditions of allegations like this being needed to be looked at, they took off on their investigation. So the case was moved back to Michigan by jurisdiction change. Before it got back to Michigan, my ex filed a complaint with the Michigan Medical Board. So as soon as things are changing, when something doesn't go her way, an allegation comes up.
Were you paying child support?
Oh, no. No, we were simply separated. But prior to leaving, unbeknownst to me, $35,000, all below $10,000, and all taken in $1,000 amounts. I didn't know this, but with that money gone and with tickets purchased in advance, it was hard for her later to justify her comment that she left in fear for her life, when in fact it appears to have been planned, for lack of a better word. It certainly wasn't spur of the moment or fear.
Dr. McGuire, if what you're saying to us is true, and I know you're not saying this, I'm just interpreting that, or you could say it's some other family, but if some other man was talking about what this woman has achieved, this other woman, this other family, we're going to say, that's a parallel of your family, this other woman is a liar, a thief, and a kidnapper. Is that correct?
I would agree. In fact, I think I used those very words in the past.
Okay.
So here we are now where a year passed when all this started, and back to Michigan, another investigation. And incredibly, while they were in Alaska, she had taken them to a therapist who, I guess you would call, began recovering memories. So over a year later, in June of 2002, our kids and she come back to Michigan because the case is there now. And my daughter is put through another forensic evaluation, questioning session at the same place. Once again, with no video, no audio, and now she says, oh, Kevin touched me. And now, here it's a year later, my kids don't call me Kevin, or didn't. That led to a custody evaluation, and by the time September rolled around, the stress of this had caused me to lose my residency. There was no money left to fight this. I had no job, no hope of getting one in Michigan. And with nowhere to go, I was advised to simply go with the flow, get back to Alaska, and things would improve when we got back there. Arguably the worst piece of advice I ever followed in my life. Back we come to Alaska, post-divorce, joint legal but physical custody to her for the moment. And our kids are back in therapy again. Visits are great. I see them. I think we're moving ahead. And then in June of 2003, remarkably, the case was never transferred to Alaska and was kept in Michigan. Off they go, down to Colorado. That's June of 2003. So I applied for a license, and that was coming later. That was done in November, but I went down in August to see that while driving in the car, my then 3-year-old son made a comment that Kevin had touched him. This was at a supervised visit where the notes disprove everything. He is taken to a forensic interview, where it's frankly videoed, and nothing comes of that. That goes away. Then a month later, so my oldest daughter is taken for her third questioning about why did she think that. Well, we still had visits. While we were, I couldn't even hold their hands.
Can I interrupt? It occurred to me, this court order thing, very interesting to me. Suppose a person, a father, has a court order saying that he's not to have contact, physical contact, or other contact with his child. But that father, on some given day, he's just walking down the beach. And lo and behold, he sees a child. He might not even recognize that it's his child. And that child is in the water drowning. And there's no one around that can save this child. So he does what's natural to many folks. He wades out into the water, swims out to this child, keeps the child afloat, brings him in, maybe even gives him CPR, and saves the child's life. Now, according to what's going on in the court system today, that father will lose all contact with that child, maybe even go to jail for contempt of court. Does this make any sense to you? You're a doctor. You're also a father. But you're a doctor. I mean, I think you've got to have some level of logistics as you look at patients, diagnose the patients, treat the patients. Does this make sense to you that you legally now, as I'm hearing on TV, we're a nation of laws. We are a nation of laws. And so now we have a law that states that because of a court order, you're not allowed to go out and save your own child. I just want to know what you think about that.
I think even under those circumstances, reason would probably intrude, and that'd be an extreme case, and certainly that would be okay. But you're right on one regard. It is difficult. Well, I believe it now because it's been happening to me. But to an outside observer, it seems the ultimate oxymoron to say you may not call, contact, see, or have anything to do with your own children, but you should get back to work practicing family medicine on the other 5 million people where you're licensed to make the money to pay us to tell you that you can't contact your own children. And an interesting sidelight, I'm separated in this circumstance from my children on the basis of this failure to follow a verbal order. But if it were that bad, it should have had some other consequence, such as we're going to court right now. We're going to call the police right now. This is some form of inappropriate behavior. It wasn't.
Absolutely.
Taking my son up out of the wagon. What did it serve? It served the gearing up of the system to look for any reason, however ludicrous, small, or some tiny rule that they think they've put in place for safety reasons, which gives them an opportunity to say, oh, let's separate dad from his kids because we have bought into this allegation frenzy started by mom, and that's what happened. So now, if that wasn't egregious enough, here is the first of the OMGs, if you want to call it text language, that came about.
For the foreign listeners, that's oh my God.
Yeah, this is the first act in the theater of the absurd here. So the social services folks are in the middle of their investigation. I've been kept from my children by this note of concerns for safety. And in late December, I find a letter in the mail with my address on it, but it is written in my ex's handwriting, both the internal letter and the envelope. I open it up, and it's dated December 3rd. And it says, it's from Social Services, informing me that I have been found to be a perpetrator of, and I'm quoting, medium sexual abuse of all three of my children, and that I'm being placed on the perpetrator list in the state of Colorado for this designation of medium sexual abuse. I can appeal it, but I have to appeal within 10 days of the date. Well, it turns out they sent the letter to my ex-wife's home. She changed it, held it, and I didn't get it till well past that deadline. Thus, I had no avenue to appeal, but I got an attorney. He went through the process, but it took until August for that to be turned around. And when it was, they said there was no evidence that this report was accurate. Now, here's the sad part, which I found out later. Sad, tragic, and frankly, unbelievable at the time, but now I see a pattern in this. There is no such designation anywhere in Colorado of medium sexual abuse. It simply does not exist. And that's from the Supreme Court Library. Further, I've asked around and had time to do it. It doesn't exist anywhere in the United States. And if, in fact, social services had said, you are a perpetrator of medium sexual abuse. Even if that designation existed, the next knock I heard should have been the police at my door to come and get me, because that's a crime. Just putting the word sexual abuse in there, not so much as a phone call. In fact, I'm out there practicing medicine and expected to do so to pay the bills for these various supervisions. That kept me from my children, that single circumstance there, and the prior stuff about no safety violation, or you've had a safety violation, you can't see your kids. That cost me a year.
Now, Dr. McGuire, I've got to interrupt you here. Let's say it takes you how many years of undergraduate school to apply to medical school? Is it four? Four undergrad, four medical school, then to be a general physician, residency on top of that. How many years there?
Well, it was a year of internship.
Right.
And then I went off and did, I was at Walter Reed for a year and then got transferred to Alaska.
Okay, I think you know where I'm going. It took you about 10 to 12 years to be a physician, an active physician?
Yes, that's a fair number, depending on which way you go with training. Sure.
Okay. So for you to be trained to give somebody an antibiotic for a cold, you had to go to school for 10 to 12 years. But somebody in social services, how much training have they had in order to be able to make up some make-believe story about you with inadequate testing, never having interviewed you, never having seen you interact with your own children? What kind of education do they have that they're able to do that to you? Do they have the proper education to make family-altering decisions like this?
I don't know what their educational requirements are, but the end result, whether they're extremely well-trained or not, the circumstance may be, it was a pure fabrication, and I find it unconscionable that this was blessed by a state-level agency. That is to say, the state of Colorado said, fine, we're going to call this medium sexual abuse based on a questionable interview of one of my children, and we're going to separate this man and his children on the basis of this. It was beyond ludicrous. It was absolutely a violation of our rights.
I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that, and I know where you're going here also, and we're going to be all over the place, I think. What rights do you have here? Tell me what rights you have. You've been accused of being a perpetrator, a medium perpetrator, and what right do you have to reacquire your status as a parent?
I had the right to go back to work, to practice medicine, to make the money, to get the attorney, to take this up the chain of command, to get someone at a certain level to say, there's nothing here. I'm sorry it took a year to get here, but we're turning everything around and there's nothing else. But while it's going on, there really were no avenues other than to appeal through the process that they had already set up as part of their structure and social services. So my rights were yanked away. Hearingless. There's no hearing for that. It was just, I got a letter, intercepted in this case, but there was a letter written, and you are kept apart.
Now, gentlemen, we're going to take a moment just to identify and welcome all the countries that have visited us. Thank everyone in the chat room. The conversation is extremely lively. They are following this so seriously. But we want to thank the countries that are visiting us this evening and the states in the provinces of Canada, Antelope, California, Sycamore, Illinois, Birmingham, Alabama, Peachtree City, Georgia, Waterloo, Iowa, Wilmington, Delaware, New Milford, New Jersey. And gentlemen, these are people that are sitting listening to us right now. Dalton, Georgia, Oneida, New York, South River, New Jersey, Malden, Massachusetts, Battle Creek, Michigan, Boston, Massachusetts, Baltimore, Maryland, Juarez, Mexico, Bienvenidos, Mexico, York, Pennsylvania, San Diego, California, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Loveland, Colorado, Greenville, South Carolina, Brussels, Belgium, London, England, Juarez, Mexico, again, San Diego, California, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Loveland, Colorado, Greenville, South Carolina, Chicago, Illinois, Nyack, New Jersey, New York, Smyrna, Georgia, Chicago, Illinois, Austin, Texas, Sparks, Nevada, DeKalb, Illinois, Pretoria, South Africa, Anchorage, Alaska, Albany, Titusville, Florida, San Francisco, Anchorage, Alaska again, more Anchorage, Alaska. And gentlemen, we'll stop there. And that was our greeting to everyone visiting us. Thank you for listening, and let's proceed with the show.
After 10 years, there's a lot of detail. the system in general, I think, which we've hit on here about how this can just tear rights from people. Now we're in September 2004, and we start a reunification process. Just before that began, Mom made another allegation. Now, I hadn't seen my own children for a year, but she made another allegation, and another investigation was started. But this reunification process was supposed to bring us back together. Everything's kind of out of the way. There's nothing here. I had seven in 5 months, and it was stopped because the therapist in charge said that I failed to acknowledge my children's reality, that something had happened. And thus, the visits were stopped.
Now, I want to stop you again. I'm sorry. This therapist was a master's degree counselor, social worker. What was her level of, was she a PhD clinical psychologist? What was her level of education and understanding? What kind of a background does she have to make these kinds of decisions?
She was a marriage and family therapist of, at that point, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years experience, I'm thinking.
Okay, so she might have had, maybe, she might have had a master's degree in counseling to be that?
Well, she only had a master's, a master's level marriage and family therapist.
Okay, all right, go on.
And it stopped right there. I ran out of money again. We'll talk in a minute. And so we move forward. I tried to put in my own motion simply to let me see my kids. That somehow got swallowed up, never went anywhere. In October 2005, I went bankrupt. With a fresh slate, I got an attorney. We had a hearing in December, the attorneys met in December. We agreed to try reunification again. Court issued an order in January of 2006. It took the woman that was designated 4 months to review the paperwork. I didn't think it was that much, but she took that much time. In May of 2006, we began, quote, reunification, which between May and November consisted of 9 visits, at which we pretty much just played Monopoly and board games. My oldest and youngest, quote, graduated from that reunification. My middle daughter was still, what I now know, feeling the severe effects of this alienation. But she seemed to loosen up by December. And from December to March, there was supposed to be, we conducted a transition to being, quote, normalizing parenting time. But I ran out of money again and was told, there's no money, we're not going anywhere. So I ran out of money. Couldn't keep going with the attorney that I had. By this time, there had been probably 20 hours of time with my children in the past year with this reunification. And then it went to 2008. I applied. I had no attorney. Put in my own motion to change custody. That was scheduled for 2009 in July. We did another, quote, custody evaluation. And then a second one on top of that. By the time it was scheduled for December, I had literally run out of money. Absolutely nothing. Every dime gone. There had been every manner of witness problems. I don't want to testify. I won't come in. Things like that. I'm fighting with therapists who say, I want $300, $400 an hour to testify. And in addition to that, there were other egregious things. One of the therapists who had reviewed the notes was in her office one day when my ex simply showed up, stormed past a client in her waiting area, went into this woman's private office, and unloaded on her, saying that since she'd heard about this letter that this woman had written to the board, complaining, you know, about the therapists, saying, I think you need to look at what they're doing. The end of the result was, she said, I've wanted you to burn and your office to burn and your practice to burn. And that resulted in a police report where, surprisingly in retrospect, nothing happened. No one did anything about that behavior that my ex exhibited. As a result now, I've not seen my own children, with the exception of a total of, I'm going to say, 4 hours total since March of 2007. Any cards and letters are returned with return to sender. I've been cut out of their lives. No information. I have to hunt that down on my own. And being separated from them has literally changed me internally, as well as the amount of stress that I'm under, has caused egregious amounts of hardship. It's affected work because I have to always answer the question, have you ever been accused? And the answer is, well, yes. And quite frankly, it's a career ruiner to a degree, because at some point, there's always that other shoe that will be dropped. I've worked at clinics where after I've been there for a day, an anonymous phone call is made saying, did you know Dr. McGuire abused his children? Now, I know people around the area, and the story is pretty well known, But still, it carries with it the force of, oh, my God, if another patient should hear that, it has an effect on the patient as well.
Well, Dr. McGuire, it's bad enough when you get grief from the patients and you have a lack of understanding or they don't trust you. I have experienced that myself. When a patient doesn't trust you, you can't do anything, even no matter how hard you want to be able to be helpful. You can't help somebody when they look you in the eye and say, I don't trust you. But I have a picture here in my hand that shows at the bottom of the picture, there's a little box. And there's a picture of the head of a girl, got long stringy hair penciled in. And there's two little black eyes and kind of a depressed mouth. I don't really see much of a nose here, might be one there, but there's tears coming out of both eyes in this picture. Do you mind me talking about this?
No, you're referring to a drawing made by my oldest daughter in
I want to read this, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Part of the time in the visits, I was just acting like I was having fun because Kevin is a doctor, and he told Catherine that he cuts people open. So, even though this probably isn't going to happen, I feel like if I act like I don't want to be there, which are my real feelings, he will think something wrong with me and cut me open. Now, this breaks my heart to read this thing and to look at this picture, but it's a big statement to me about where this child is at and how much suffering this child is undergoing. And I guess we could lose our jobs. I guess we could lose our patients, patients. But when you lose your own children, and your own children are made to look at you as if instead of being the loving daddy that most children remember their daddies to be, they are taught by someone that their daddy is evil, wicked, mean, will hurt them, in this case, will cut them open. This is child abuse, and this is an unbelievable level of child abuse. And for this woman to send back birthday cards that you send, and presents that you send, and those children, no doubt, never see them. And even grandma's cards, I understand, grandma's had cards that she sent, and they've come back as well. This is an unbelievable child abuse in and of itself. I just want the listeners to realize, and I know many of them do, because their parents in the same status that you are in. Their situations are a little bit different, but they've suffered in various kinds of ways, just like you have had, because they have had to undergo a level of scrutiny and a level of persecution that, in essence, in my opinion, is one in which a parent no longer has any right to be a parent, and the children are sold on an auction block now to the highest bidder. You told me last week, that you have spent $500,000. You just told the listeners that you as a doctor went bankrupt, and I've talked to you, and I know you don't have enough money to follow through on this at any great level even now. So not only do you not have any rights, but you don't even have enough money to go buy your kids. You can't get to your kids. And there's no way, because between you and your kids is a system that says you have to hire a juris doctor, because he or she is the only one who has the knowledge and the means to cut through the insidious red tape in order to allow you to even gain any form of access, even telephone access, to your children.
That's true. I think that it is a system where, and I'll say this because it's a common phrase, you get the justice you can afford. Now, let me qualify that. It's not that you're paying people off or you're trying to do something illegal. But the cast of people that are involved, the need to have attorneys sort through it for you, the cost of court, the therapists who keep your children in these long-term therapy sessions and long terms of involvement, searching for something that they can't even define, the social services people who, in my case, put me on a list, which effectively was a career killer. And then the ongoing cost of just trying to get time, the cost of, quote, supervision, travel and the expense involved in having to deal with what is already known to be false. These allegations, at least in my case, have been through 7 different rounds as mom has made these allegations. And even when faced with the exact opposite, which is to say, out of the mouths of babes, so to speak, and as an example, unbeknownst to me at the time, this is October 2004, after what would have been a cumulative 3 years of, quote, therapy, my youngest daughter, our middle child, was taken to an interview because she felt like she wanted to talk, quote, unquote.
Dr. McGuire, I've got it right here. I've got the statement right here. How did you know that your brother and sister were touched? This is with an interviewer. My, heard like from your mom or someone that they were touched? And then she says, I think my mom told me. Is that what you're referring to?
There's another line in there, if you look for it. It was also noted in the social services note where my daughter says, was asked essentially, why do you say these things? And she says, well, now that my mom told me about it,
yes.
It was my other dad, and he did it in Michigan, blah, 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 and that's a quote, essentially telling them, hey, I was told to say this. I've been brainwashed, and I've been making these statements. That right there should have made everything come to a halt. Instead, not only did I not know about it, but 2 months later, we were in court. My mom had to file a motion to see her own grandkids. The therapists were aware of that comment and did not inform the court that they knew it. I'm sure the court would have wanted to hear that. And then had the audacity to turn around and say that my own mom couldn't see her grandkids. One, because of the absurdity of saying, well, we're afraid that the kids might see a family resemblance between Dr. McGuire and his mother, and that might upset our therapy of them. But two, they said they were afraid of, quote, statements that grandmother might make to the kids that would be counter to their reality, which is to say, they might disrupt what the therapists were cooperating with in, was an alienation, a separation of my children and I, in effect, an organized parentectomy. Let's cut dad out.
And now, if I understand correctly, your oldest daughter, speaking of reality, her reality now is that she's been diagnosed with depression, stress-related stomach acid disorder, and she's been diagnosed with migraine headaches at the age of 12. Is that correct? 12?
Right. Some of that has been intermittent, but along the way, those are things that have happened to her. And as we sit here today, in the big picture, this is a system-wide failure. And within that failure, rights are summarily removed from parents and children, whether it's a dad or mom. And the separation engenders both stress, hardship, and damage. You're right. This is emotional child abuse. In fact, I recently wrote a note off to some folks regarding psychological abuse. All states, most, have a definition of this. Now, I know in Colorado it has a definition, but the CDC's definition of psychologically abusive behaviors includes comments such as isolating, spurning the child, engaging in behaviors such as blaming or belittling, degrading or intimidating. There's a list of them, all of which have been exhibited towards my children, most by their mother, others by therapists or social services, in cooperating with what is a psychological fraud and an organized, if you will, violation of our civil rights. And I don't see any way out of this except to go through the way that we got in at the moment, which takes excruciating amounts of money and horrific amounts of time. And as we sit here today, going with the system, trying to follow it, trying to get things done, has lost 10 years of their lives. And as a doctor, I can tell you, it is the ultimate irony that I'm told to pay these people to do these things because there's a, quote, concern, but to make that money by practicing medicine where I can practice, and it certainly has a ring of untruth to it from their end. I'm good enough for the rest of the world, but not my own children. So there's more to address. Right. That's, I'm hearing music in the background.
Gentlemen, it's unbelievable. This has been so riveting that we are sitting at the edges of our seat and we're down to the last 90 seconds. This has been a marvelous show. Dr. Kevin McGuire, Dr. James Wardner, You are such a welcome host, set of hosts at syndicatednews.net. This show has been a joy to listen to, and the chat room conversations have been so lively. Again, I'm going to have to leave the chat room open until they're finished with their conversations. Thank you both. I can't thank you enough. You have been marvelous. It has been a wonderful, heart-wrenching, but a wonderful show nonetheless. Thank you both.
Thank you, Ruthie. Good night.
And Ruthie, thank you. And we'll, Jim, I look forward to our next. And Ruthie, thank you so much.
And we'll get together and talk about when we're going to do this again.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.